on Friday, and I start having me a ball. Cause I got a good feeling, and I don't feel no pain at all. Friday and my day.
Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around a little bit tonight, all right? Just for a while. I know it's Friday night. Yeah, I'd rather be out hanging too, but nah, we have things to be and places to do, right? Two personalities passed away today. Well, a lot of personalities died today, but Van Johnson, the movie star, who was, I think, 92, and I believe she was 84, 85, Betty Page died today. Oh, my God. You know who Betty Page is, right? Okay, if you don't, Google Betty Page. Okay, that's all. Just pause for a moment there. That's all. What else we have? I have for you tonight an Uncle Mike Story Corner that you're just simply not going to believe. Not so much by what is being said, although in Uncle Mike Story Corner, the essay is very definitive, but because of who wrote it, it's just mind-boggling. I think we're going to try to do it at the bottom of this hour. So stick around, and if you have some friends that want to hear the most astonishing Uncle Mike Story Corner ever, call them up, tell them to get online or tune the radio or do whatever. And when I read it this evening, it came in late. When I read it, I just oh no. Oh, no, indeed. Kay in San Francisco, who teaches school, wrote, Hi, Mike. Today was the last day of the semester, so it was pointless to do any kind of serious lesson with my students. They were climbing the wall, so I decided to show Michael Moore's film, Roger and Me. I figured that with the American auto manufacturers in the news, there'd be some overlap with the events that Moore covered 20 years ago. I was stunned to see just how relevant the film is, still is, today. Moore documents exactly how we got here, starting with the sit-down strikes of the 30s, the boom of the 40s and 50s, the closing of the factories and the shipping of jobs overseas starting in the 80s, and the union workers who became Reagan Democrats to their own detriment. Et voila, here we are in 2008, 20 years further down this catastrophic road with no end in sight. We did end up having a lively conversation about the importance of unions, and I didn't pretend to be neutral on the subject. I talked about their importance to average working Americans and gave several examples from my own life. My husband was a union worker for many years. Hopefully, after we cover the unit on the early 20th century, which includes reading excerpts from The Jungle, these kids will have an even better understanding of the fact that without the unions, American workers would never have stood a chance. Okay, in San Francisco. Yeah, well, I'm real glad to hear that because, again, I don't know what's being taught in high school now. My son Chris is now 30 and at university, and 15 years ago when he went through high school, I don't remember having long discussions with him about his high school work at all. When I was in high school, we learned about the union movement. It was very important to learn about the union movement. We learned all the names, everybody from Samuel Gompers to Walter Reuther to John L. Lewis to Jimmy Hoffa, to, you know, all of it. Did I learn about Hoffa in high school? No, I guess not. But the historic names we learned about and what the union movement was all about. And how critical it was to the development of a middle class in this country. So I'm glad that Kay, at least, I'm sure some of the other people who listen to this program who teach school also cover this. But you know what? In a lot of schools where certain textbooks are used, American history and government textbooks, if that's the way it's covered now, it's not covered at all because it's not in the textbook. And there's a reason for that. Speaking of Michael Moore, he had an email today, the subject of which is Senate to the Middle Class, Drop Dead. Here's what Michael Moore wrote. Friends, I could have given the loan on the condition that the automakers start building only cars and mass transit that reduce our dependency on oil. They could have given the loan on the condition that the automakers build cars that reduce global warming. They could have given the loan on the condition that the automakers withdraw their many lawsuits against state governments in their attempts to not comply with our environmental laws. They could have given the loan on the condition that the management team which drove these once great manufacturers into the ground resign and be replaced with a team who understands the transportation needs of the 21st century. Yes, they could have given the loan for any of these reasons, because in the end, to lose our manufacturing infrastructure and throw 3 million people out of work would be a catastrophe. But instead, the Senate said, we'll give you the loan only if the factory workers take a $20 an hour cut in wages, pension, and health care. That's right, after giving billions to Wall Street hucksters and criminal investment bankers, billions with no strings attached, and as we have since learned, no oversight whatsoever, the Senate decided it was more important to break a union, more important to throw middle-class wage earners into the ranks of the working poor, than to prevent the total collapse of industrial America. We have a little more than a month to go of this madness. As I sit here in Michigan today, tens of thousands of hardworking, honest, decent Americans do not believe they can make it to January 20th. The malaise here is astounding. Why must they suffer because of the mistakes of every CEO from Roger Smith to Rick Wagoner? Make management and the boards of directors and the shareholders pay for this. Of course, that is heresy to the 31 Republicans who decided to blame the poor, miserable auto workers for this mess. And our wonderful media complied with their spin on the morning news shows. UAW refuses to give concessions, killing auto bailout bill, they all screamed. In fact, the UAW has given concession after concession, reduced their benefits, agreed to get rid of the jobs bank, agreed to make it harder for the retirees to live from week to week. Yes, that's what we need to do. It's the jobs bank and the old people who have led the nation to economic ruin. But even doing that wasn't enough to satisfy the bastard Republicans. These Senate vampires wanted blood, blue-collar blood. You see, they weren't opposed to the bailout because they believed in the free market or capitalism. No, they were opposed to the bailout because they're opposed to workers making a decent wage. In their rage, they were driven to destroy the backbone of this country, not because the UAW hasn't given back enough, but because the UAW hasn't given up. It appears that the sitting president has been looking for a way to end his reign by one magnanimous act, just like a warlord on his feast day. He will put his finger in the dike, and the fragile mess of an auto industry will eke through the next few months. That will give the Senate enough time to demand that the bankers and investment sharks who've already swiped nearly half of the $700 billion gift, a chance to make the offer of cutting their pay. Fat chance. Yours, Michael Moore.
Stand up, all victims of oppression, for the tyrants fear your might. Don't cling so hard to your possessions, for you have nothing if you have no right. Let race, this ignorance be ended, for
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's 21 past the hour. You know, we have to be very clear here. I think the last thing that's needed right now, at this point in our history, is obfuscation or deceit or confusion on the part of anybody who has access to a microphone or a camera. And that includes you when you call this program or any program and you have access to a microphone. It also includes the health, radio, and television. It also includes your ability to blog and get a post on the internet where it can be seen. You create your own media. The people who came up with that that line are correct. But let us really, really focus down on this tonight, because Uncle Mike's Story Corner is coming up after the break at the bottom of the hour, is going to put a fine point on something we've been talking about for a long time on this program, you and I. And that is that this country is in a transition from which it doesn't look like we're going to be able to put the brakes on. We are shifting from, if the shift has not already occurred, and arguably it has, we are shifting from representative democracy to corporatism. Now, a lot of people have been saying for three years that shift has already been accomplished. That elections don't matter, political parties don't matter, except around the fringes. Do you want somebody in office who believes the earth was created and evil was unleashed on the planet because a woman talked to a talking snake? Do you want to have that in the White House? Or do you want to have somebody who wants to try to turn things around? The point is, perhaps this is the point, it really doesn't matter anymore. Unless you still believe in a certain element of free thought, intellectual freedom, that sort of thing. Because once the religious crazies really take hold, everything stops. Look at Saudi Arabia. Look at any country that is run by religious fanatics. But the transition is rolling over us like a tidal wave. You do understand that, right? You do. This is something that comes up in discussion between me and Kathy, or among people I hang out with. And it leads me to really question whether or not there's any point in doing the kind of media blather that I do. And don't send me emails now and say, oh, we need you, Mike, we need you, Mike. You know, this is just talk. This really doesn't mean anything. So don't respond to it. Not right now. Really, I'm serious. Because, I mean, it's one thing to be a crusader. It's something else, again, to be, what's his name? Sancho Panza? Is that his name? Don Quixote's sidekick. And, you know, I don't want to be that. Kathy says Pancho Villa. I would be him. But not, you know, the little Spanish sidekick that rode along, you know, watching Don Quixote tilt at his windmills. I guess it's a decision that anybody who writes or broadcasts or thinks, you know, that you have to make. You know, whether or not to continue to talk about a present that really doesn't exist anymore. You understand what I'm saying? You know, to sit here, you and I, night after night after night, and go through our drama or our theatrics about, okay, well, we're still struggling. Yes, indeed, we are, to resist the tide, yada yada yada, and then to really come to a realization, a conclusion, whether it's cynical or not, that, you know, you can't stop the river. You can't push the river. You really can't. It's maddening. It really is. And I think that's one of the reasons that I hung so much on the candidacy of Barack Obama, because You know, that desire to just grab anything that comes floating by, anything, even if it's a cardboard box and you're heading for open sea, you still grab at it. So, I don't know. I'm a little bit freaked out this evening. Paul B. Farrell is our Story Corner author tonight. And if you don't know who he is, he writes for the Wall Street Journal at their MarketWatch.com website. And it's when I read this today or this evening, you know, I just thought, wow, this really says something. And again, I don't think you're going to hear anything that you haven't already heard or thought or come up with on your own. But who it comes from, Paul B. Farrell. Stick around. We'll do this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour, and it's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Gather around, kiddies, because, well, we might not be able to gather around a nice warm fireplace in our comfy little living room here too much longer. Time for another edition of Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight's Uncle Mike's Story Corner is entitled Wall Street's Disaster Capitalism for Dummies, and it's written by Paul B. Farrell, who writes for MarketWatch.com, which is owned by the Wall Street Journal. Yes, we're dummies. You, me, all 300 million of us, clueless, we should be ashamed, we're obsessed about the slogans and rituals of so-called democracy, distracted by the campaign, the polls, the debates, the rhetoric, half-truths and outright lies, McCain, Obama, sorry to pop your bubble, folks, but it no longer matters. Who's president? Why? Well, the real game changer already happened. Democracy has been replaced by Wall Street's new disaster capitalism. That's the big game changer historians will remember about 2008, masterminded by Wall Street's ultimate Trojan horse, Henry Paulson. Imagine greed, arrogance, and incompetence create a massive bubble, cost trillions, and still Wall Street comes out smelling like roses, richer and more powerful. Yes, we're idiots. While distracted by the illusion of democracy and the endless campaign, Congress surrendered the powers we entrusted it with very little fight. Congress simply handed over voting power and the keys to trillions in the Treasury to Wall Street's new disaster capitalists who now control so-called democracy. Why did this happen? We're in denial, clueless wimps. That's why we let it happen. In one generation, America has been transformed from a democracy into a strange new form of government, disaster capitalism. Here's how it happened. 3 decades of influence peddling in Washington has built an army of 42,000 special interest lobbyists representing corporations and the wealthy. Today, these lobbyists manipulate America's 537 elected officials with massive campaign contributions that fund candidates who vote their agenda. This historic buildup accelerated under Reaganomics and went into hyperspeed under Bushonomics, both totally committed to a new disaster capitalism run privately by Wall Street and corporate America. No-bid contracts in wars and hurricanes. A housing credit bubble while secretly planning for a meltdown. And finally, the coup de grace, along came the housing credit crisis as planned. Press and public saw a negative, a crisis. Disaster capitalists saw a huge opportunity. Yes, opportunity for big bucks and control of America. Millions of homeowners with marginal banks suffered huge losses. Taxpayers stuck with trillions in debt, but giant banks emerge intact, stronger, with virtual control over government and the power to use taxpayer funds. They are laughing at us idiots. Amazing, isn't it? Wall Street's disaster capitalists screwed up, likely planned or let happen, this meltdown and recession. Yet America's clueless taxpayers just reward them by giving the screw-ups massive bailouts, control over more than $2 trillion worth of tax money, and the power to clean up the mess they made. Oh, yes, we are dummies. This end game was planned for years in secret war rooms on Wall Street, in corporate America, in Washington, in the Forbes 400. Democracy, you see, is too cumbersome. It had to be marginalized for disaster capitalism to take over. Reagan, Bush, and Paulson were Wall Street's Trojan horses. Naomi Klein summarized the game in Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. This so-called new economy generates enormous profits, feeding off other people's misery. Wars, terror attacks, natural catastrophes, poverty, trade sanctions, subprime housing meltdowns, and all kinds of economic, financial, and political disasters. Natural, like Katrina, or man-made, like the war in Iraq. Either way, disaster capitalism creates fortunes. So you, me, and the other 300 million better get out of denial. America is no longer a democracy. Voting is irrelevant. Best case scenario? We're a plutocracy, a government ruled by the wealthy, the richest 1%, the Forbes 400, the influential wealthy elite, while the other 99% are their servants. Meanwhile, the inflation-adjusted incomes of wage earners has declined for 3 decades. Worst-case scenario, America is no democracy, and as a result of the meltdown and the surrender of our power to Wall Street's new disaster capitalism, we are morphing into what one World War II dictator called corporatism, a merger of state and corporate power, kind of like what's going on now with Goldman Sachs' ex-boss as de facto president. They're like wolves in sheep's clothing. Yeah, strong charge. But like a lot of our readers, I don't like what's happening to America. I'm a patriot. I volunteered for the Marines, served 4 years, volunteered for Korea. I don't like how our freedoms, rights, and value system are being subverted in the name of greed, arrogance, self-righteous intolerance, and other false gods. We know for the last 8 years, disaster capitalists ignored obvious warnings of a coming meltdown. They apparently planned it. They rode the bull, got very rich. Now they have the ultimate disaster capitalist weapons, trillions in tax money, virtual control of government. That's why I fear we're on the edge of a dangerous line between Wall Street's version of disaster capitalism and a toxic merger of state and corporate power. The wolf is in sheep's clothing. Wall Street pretends we're a democracy, yet America more closely resembles the kind of corporatism that Lawrence Britt wrote about 5 years ago in Free Enquiry magazine. We adapted his historical analysis of 14 key traits for today's discussion. Notice how they have a huge impact on your investments in retirement. 1. Wall Street rich get first priority. Think bailout. Wall Street's greedy con game spins out of control globally. Millions of homeowners misled, lose. Who gets hundreds of billions first? Wall Street's con men. 2. National security obsession. Think of the expansion of executive powers in the name of national security. Preemptive wars, wiretapping private citizens, Gitmo, torture, driven by a dark, wealthy neocon elite. 3. Superpower with massive military. Think of our $3 trillion Iraq-Afghan war. Disaster capitalists love the thrill of military power. We outspend all nations over half the federal budget to strut before the world. 4. Extreme nationalism. Signs are everywhere. Flags, lapel pins, support the troops slogans, all to get huge military budgets passed. Challenge them, and you're un-American and unpatriotic. 5. Rally the masses by scapegoating enemies. Think axis of evil, mushroom clouds, Islamo-fascists, more terrorist attacks on the homeland. Propaganda creates enemies in the public's mind and distracts from real issues. 6. Corruption and cronyism. Think earmarks, no-bid defense contracts, paid mercenaries outnumbering military in Iraq, super lobbyist Jack Abramoff, biofuels, bridge to nowhere, millions donated to campaigns. 7. Obsession with crime. Think a prison building is just another investment opportunity rather than focusing on reforming our criminal justice system. Stoke irrational fear of criminals and extremists. 8. Labor and low wages. Think corporate earnings versus the wages paid to workers. No trickling down leaves more for the tricklers. Rich insiders, stockholders, wages dropping as CEO salaries skyrocket. 9. Contempt for human rights. Think of abuses of habeas corpus, loss of the right to trial, bogus charges, demonizing the victims, all in the name of national defense and homeland security. 10. Mass media manipulation. Think of leaking false information. Joseph Wilson, Valerie Plame, Scooter Libby, Colin Powell's United Nations testimony, Condoleezza Rice's mushroom clouds, weapons of mass destruction, all to suppress the truth. 11. Obsession with sexism. Think of paternalism, anti-gays, anti-abortion, subordinate women, then codify the system as the law of the land, reinforcing a male-dominated society. Punish the violators. 12. Disdain for intellectuals. Think of conservative intellectuals, Francis Fukuyama and Bill Buckley. Contrast them to Sarah Palin and Joe Sixpack conservatism, Bush's funding cuts for the arts and science education. 13. Religion in government. Think of all the faith-based programs versus anti-science and drug approvals, creationism versus evolution, Ten Commandments enshrined in public buildings, public money to churches. 14. Fraudulent elections. Think of police and prosecutorial intimidation and threats to voters, challenging minority voters, ballots disappearing, party election officials committing outright fraud. Yes, officially, America is still a democracy. We have enough signs and rituals to support that illusion, but the truth is, America has become a plutocracy run by and for the wealthy. And since Wall Street's disaster capitalism coup de grace, we are rapidly morphing into a dangerous new government. Uncle Mike's Story Corner for tonight. And, of course, you know what Paul B. Farrell, although he didn't say the F word, those are the 14 signs of a society's shift to fascism. We'll be back after the break.
Mike Malloy.
Oh, Uncle Mike's Story Corner scared the hell out of Uncle Mike. I swear to God it did. Oh, yeah. And, of course, that was written in October of this year. At marketwatch.com by Paul Farrell, who works for the Wall Street Journal. Oh, my goodness. Now, a lot of people, of course, have been talking about this for a long time, that there really isn't a whole lot of difference anymore. I don't mean the George Wallace kind of rhetoric back in the 60s. There's not a dime's worth of difference, although he did make a rather salient point, didn't he? But, no, I mean the fact that corporate America now owns just about everything. I still, though, and this is my weakness. I still hold out some hope. I really do. I hold out some hope that Barack Obama, with his appointments, and I realize some of his nominations, the ones that have to be confirmed by the Senate, of course, are just nominations, but the rest, his appointments, that the people he is putting together as his team are serious about stopping this. Now, I know the answer. No. They're all owned by the corporations. And yet I keep thinking about how much money Barack Obama raised via the Internet from people who believed in what he was doing. I don't know which way to go. I'm probably as lost as deeply in the forest as you are, but I goddamn will not at this point in my life and in the history of this country. I'm not going to toss in the towel. I just can't. Even though somebody is erudite and well read on things corporate and as our story corner author tonight, and given Naomi Klein's utter brilliance. I would hope that Naomi Klein's book is more of a roadmap rather than what to avoid, how to take it back, rather than throw up your hands, give up, sit down, go back to $4 an hour, cover your head with sackcloth and ashes, go into church every weekend. If you're a Jew, I don't know, where do you go? Do you go to synagogue? Will they allow synagogues? Will they allow temples and mosques? And I don't think that's what Naomi Klein's talking about. And Mr. Farrell here kind of gave the impression that it was a throw up your hands in the air and run screaming into the woods moment. But maybe not. At least I'm not ready to do that. I really am not. Especially not here in Georgia. I mean, if the time comes to run screaming into the woods, I don't know. I'm heading for the Pacific Northwest, I guess. I don't know. I have no idea. But not now. Not now. And one of the reasons, I swear to God, one of the reasons I have a kid, 4.5 years old. Now, I have grandchildren, but I don't see them every day. And I'm not sculpting them. And I am Molly to a certain degree. And I have this little 4.5-year-old kid who is just chock-a-block with enthusiasm for what she sees. Whether it's people, places, things. Molly is one of the most exuberant, sometimes to the point of driving Kathy and me almost over the edge, but she's one of the most exuberant little kids I've ever come across. You can't not like Molly. Me included. I'm not bragging on her because she's my kid, not at all. She astonishes me. And when I take her to preschool every morning, or Kathy takes her to preschool, and I say goodbye to her, and then Kathy and I go pick her up, or one of us picks her up, and she's just brimming with life and enthusiasm and joy and happiness. Everything is good to this kid. Everything. Everything is good. And when we have to discipline her or send her to her room or time out or yell at her, 10 minutes later, it's gone. We're friends again. She holds no grudges. She doesn't know what's out there. I wish there was some way that I could protect her, and I can't. Any more than you can protect your kids or your grandkids or your nieces and nephews. You can't do it. So what's the other alternative? Or what's the alternative? To make some sort of an effort, perhaps, to change what these little kids are going to face 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road. But I'll tell you what, as long as I see not just Molly, but her little playmates too. I mean, all the kids that go to this preschool in a Presbyterian church, all these kids. Kathy and I sometimes get there about 5 minutes early. We pull up, and there's a parking lot right next to the playground where they're all fenced in until the parents come, and we watch them play. And it's just, oh, my God. You tend to forget that, don't you, as you get older and older and your kids grow up, like mine did, until Kathy and I had Molly. And then all of a sudden you get to see that movie again, and you say, oh, damn, I've seen this before. I remember this. I remember when I was like this. I remember 5 years old. So that's the main reason that I say no. Hell no. God damn hell no. I'm not going to give up. Naomi Klein and Paul Farrell and the rest of these people are a hell of a lot smarter than I am. But maybe it's been a while since they looked at a 4.5-year-old and watched. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want you to hear some of the things that Ron Gettelfinger said today, the president of the United Auto Workers, when he held a press conference this morning. I'm just dumbfounded. I stumbled in the kitchen today when that came on, and we got the little TV in the kitchen. We have like a little TV in the kitchen, little TV in the bedroom, and a regular TV in the den, and they're like telescreens. You know, they seem to be on all the time lately. But I watched Ron Gettelfinger, and I couldn't pull myself away. I thought, I'll be damned. You go, Ron. Talk. Talk, brother. Say it. Preach. We'll share some of that with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Oh, yeah, welcome back. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. All right, we want you to hear a little bit of United Auto Workers President Ron Gettelfinger at a news conference this morning. He held this news conference to explain how this this pig Republican, Senator Corker, Bob Corker, where is he from, Kathleen? Russ, Senator, he's from Tennessee. Did you know Tennessee contains within its borders the biggest, is it Toyota, production center outside Japan? Is it Toyota or Honda? One of the two. How Senator Corker and other Senate Republicans deliberately killed the auto bailout bill with the intention of crippling the United Auto Workers. Here's Gettelfinger.
Yesterday morning, I received a call from Senator Bob Corker laying out some stipulations that he was going to introduce in the Senate and asked me if the UAW would be willing to consider entering into talks with him. At that time, we recognized that it was very risky to do this. First of all, we did not know who Senator Corker was representing on the Republican side. We reached a tentative agreement with Senator Corker on those modifications. The tentative agreement with Senator Corker provided that bondholders and retiree health care VEBA would both have to exchange a large portion of their claims for equity or stock in the companies. And as Senator Corker recognized, these agreed-to changes would have made an enormous difference in the balance sheets of the companies and largely solved their financial problems. Senator Corker admitted to our people on the ground there that the other discussions over wages were largely about politics within the GOP caucus. And we went so far as after having stood up at a press conference prior to going to Washington and saying that we would eliminate the jobs bank, it was insisted that we put that in that bill. I personally took that as an insult. However, in order to move this process forward, we agreed to put that language in there. But the Senate caucus rejected that agreement.
Now, keep in mind, as you listen, I've only got two more from Gettelfinger, but keep in mind what's going on here. The big industrial Midwestern states, the ones that are still able to breathe, that rely on the auto industry and its tangential industries, did not go Republican this time. This is punishment of the most severe kind. That's A, or that's B. A, Southern white male Republicans and at one time Democrats have done everything they could possibly do in the past 50 years to absolutely murder the union movement in this country, even to the point they're willing to destroy the economy of the entire country, these sons of bitches, in order to accomplish that goal. Now, if you've ever seen this Senator Corker on television, I mean, there's somebody who really makes my skin crawl, kind of like Limbaugh. Every time I see Limbaugh, I literally get waves of nausea that rolls over me. But Limbaugh's just a pig. This guy, who actually has a vote in the United States Senate and did everything he could to plunge a knife, just like Michael Moore said, just put a knife right into the gut of the last really powerful industrial union in this country. These sons of bitches, I just hope that every single American, I'm not talking about you dumbass Republicans, you don't matter anymore, but I hope that normal Americans will never forget what these Republicans have done and are doing, even at the last minute. Half these bastards aren't even going to be there next year. But remember what they've done. And maybe my guest author tonight was right on the money, that it's a fait accompli. It's already been done. We live in a fascist or corporatist society. But I say no. Hell no. We're not there yet. There's still a little bit of daylight. Just remember, these filthy sons of bitches who care nothing about this country. Oh, man. Gettelfinger then continues about the myth that U.S. auto workers are paid more than their foreign counterparts, which is a big Republican argument about wage freezes. They don't give a goddamn about wage freezes. They don't care about any of this. Every single Republican lies every time, the office holders especially, every time he opens his pie hole to say anything. Now, listen to Gettelfinger here.
There was an article put out by the Detroit Free Press on January the 31st of 2007, and with a headline said, UAW losing pay edge. And it referred specifically to the Toyota motor plant that paid bonuses of $6,000 to $8,000 in Georgetown, Kentucky, and it brought it up to an equivalent of $30 an hour. Additionally, Toyota put out on Thursday and Friday, September the 25th and 26th of 2008, that with their bonuses, their workers made $30.45 an hour. Under our agreement, it was $28.12 an hour. So when you say that the wages and the benefits have to be equal, in discussions I had with Senator Corker, I made it clear, and he understood, that this was mixing apples and oranges. This was just simply subterfuge on the part of the minority and the Republican Party who wanted to tear down any agreement that we come up with.
And the one thing Gettelfinger wouldn't add, of course, is that so-called minority in the Republican Party, and it's more than a minority. He's focusing on the moment, and he's taking it out of context. That so-called minority in the Republican Party who want to tear down any agreement that is put forward, This is that force, that power that is disaster capitalism, or to put it more bluntly, fascism. This is what Naomi Klein has written about. This is what Paul B. Farrell has written about. As far as arguing about $2, I mean, Jesus Christ. The workers at Toyota, as Gettelfinger said, made $30.45 an hour. The UAW offered $28.12 an hour. So everything that Corker has said, everything that Richard Shelby, everything these piggish white corporate shills who occupy Senate seats have said is a goddamn lie. It's a complete lie. All of it. Every bit of it. The objective here is to destroy, finally, forever, the union movement. This is what Reagan came into office about. This is what this son of a bitch who now occupies the Oval Office, what he's been about, what they've all been about, every single Republican. And a good number of Democrats, too. Finally, Gettelfinger took some questions from the press, including this bombshell about a Republican plan to permanently sink the unions in America. Huh? Reporter says, Mr. Gettelfinger, I know you've heard this before. Is there a possibility that there was a master plan, that this movement was all part of an effort to oust or break the United Auto Workers to keep them out of the so-called right-to-work states?
I have in my hand a document that was provided to us, and I'm going to say up front that the from was deleted to it when it was given to us, and the to, and it's an email. And it was an action alert called auto bailout. It says, and this was Wednesday, December the 10th, 2008, at 9:12 a.m. Today at noon, Senators Ensign, Shelby, Colburn, and DeMint will hold a press conference in the Senate Radio TV gallery. They would appreciate our support through messaging and attending the press conference if possible. The message they want us to deliver is, one, this is the Democrats' first opportunity to pay off organized labor after the election. Republicans should stand firm and take their first shot against organized labor instead of taking their first blow from it. We should not rush to pass this because Detroit says the sky is falling. Again, the hardest thing for the Democrats to do is get 60 votes. If we can hold the Republicans, we can beat this. And again, I will stipulate that when I received this document, this is the way I got it. The from is not there, and the to is not there. But our sources, and you understand sources, our sources indicate to us this was put out by staffers on the Republican side of the aisle.
So that's pretty self-explanatory, isn't it? These pigs in the Republican Party, and I, you know, I've said it before. I would not hesitate to just beat the living hell out of the first elected Republican senator that's trying to destroy my country to the same extent that I would willfully, willingly beat the living hell out of anybody that came into my country to destroy it. This is a fifth column movement in this country. This is like World War II with Nazis running around sending information home about where the munitions plants were in New Jersey. Ah, these fascist bastards. It is so hard for me sometimes to get my mind around the fact that the Republican Party hates this country, wants it to end, and will do anything to institute fascism. Sometimes it's hard to get my mind around that. And then all I have to do is listening to some piece of human excrement like Bob Corker.
Feeling left out by right-wing talk radio? You found a home.
with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. We're going to have a quick phoner, as they say, with Bob Alexander from prosecutegeorgebush.com and also superbeans.com after the break at the bottom of the hour. He has one more thing to say, I think. From our economic affairs advisor, Prairie 2 writes, Mike, Bush headed off market collapse at the last minute this morning by issuing a statement that he wouldn't let the automakers fail. But as details of what the Bush crime family has in mind begins to emerge, it becomes clear that the companies could survive, but if he has his way, the union won't. And retirees' chances look dim. However, 573,000 newly unemployed workers last week is producing a trend that suggests saving Detroit may be a waste of time. We've had big spikes in layoffs before, the Reagan recession, the Elder Bush recession, the post-9/11 panic, etc., but the spikes now have been coming one after another, bigger and bigger. The chart line of this has been getting steadily steeper since June, and now it's going nearly straight up. A big difference from past spikes, layoff spikes, is that they were just spikes. People would find other work. Would you like fries with that? These people aren't finding jobs and add to the number pursuing a new career as a homeless person. The final job loss total for November will probably reach 750,000, and unless the weekly new jobless claims level off, and there is nothing that makes me think this would happen, the total job loss for December could be doubled that of November or worse. With 45,000 pounds of canned corn in the back and the radio going on and on about how government is the problem and Barack Hussein Obama is really a Muslim terrorist, we're halfway down the mountain, the 13-speed is stuck in neutral, the air brakes are burned out, the Republicans have stolen the sand pile from the runway lane. Time to switch the radio to Mike Malloy. Oh, God.
Oh, man.
We are having some kind of fun now, right? I can't, it's just difficult for me to understand that the Senate Republicans really did say no to this $14 billion auto rescue plan that was approved by fairly big margin in the House on Wednesday. Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, said this is going to be a very, very bad Christmas for a lot of people as a result of what takes place here tonight. Bad Christmas. And how about January, February, March, April, May, and so on and so on. Mitch McConnell, whose beard, his wife, because Mitch is just gay as a $3 bill, his wife, Elaine Chao, who's the Labor Secretary. Isn't that funny? Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said, quote, we have had before us this whole question of the viability of the American automobile manufacturers. None of us want to see them go down, so to speak, but very few of us had anything to do with the dilemma that they've created for themselves, end quote. And he said more, but, you know, why bother? All right, we'll be back after the break. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
no subliminal messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
25 before the hour. J.S. wrote in, isn't it ironic that Japanese markets support helping American automakers, but our own Republican senators say drop dead? Not really. I mean, I certainly understand that. All right, Bob Alexander, who runs superbeans.com as an advertiser on this program. We've talked to him many times before. He also has prosecutegeorgebush.com. He and his wife, Arminda, and a woman named Jude, who is with Women Standing in Seattle, also have put an awful lot of sweat equity into a proposition that Bob Alexander came up with one night after drinking too much grape juice or something. But the idea was to get books into the hands of all 2,700 county prosecutors in the United States, those at least who among their population had had somebody who had been killed in Iraq in George W. Bush's illegal war. The book, of course, is Prosecuting George Bush for Murder by Vince Bugliosi. And we talked the other night on the program. Bob called in. Things had changed. Instead of needing $39,000, he needed $3,900. And he sent me an email tonight, and I thought we ought to bring him on. Hey, Bob.
Good evening.
Apparently it is. According to your email, you've made it?
Thanks to you and the listeners of Nova M. We're over the top. We're done. I just talked to the publisher today, ordered thousands of books. They'll arrive, and we'll send them out to every single DA who's had a soldier from his county killed in Iraq.
That's incredible. You mean that after appearing, or just chatting, not appearing, this is not television, Mike, talking on this program the other night, that the listeners actually came through. In these times, with everybody, sweating bullets about, where they're going to buy the next can of canned corn?
Well, they came in 3, 6, $5, $10, $15. They just kept coming in steadily and put us over the top.
Wow.
We've had, well over 750 people altogether are part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And now all we have to do is pop them in the mail.
Now, this is what, and you notice I remembered Arminda's name.
No one does. It's okay.
So this is what you and Arminda and Jude and maybe Nick, your son, you guys are going to do this or what?
As soon as the books arrive, I figure we can't send the books out now because why stress the post office right before Christmas? But right after Christmas,
right,
we'll have a stuffing party. I'll email everyone who's donated in the Seattle area to come on over. And a fellow wrote in, he's going to donate his truck. And we'll just go down and scare somebody at the post office.
Oh, man. How much finger-crossing is going on about somebody who gets one of these books? I'm sure you can't be a prosecutor in this country without knowing the name Vince Bugliosi. But that one of these prosecutors will at least read a synopsis or read the book and say, damn, there's a plan here, and will be motivated because of what happened in his or her county. Do you, I mean, what are the chances, Bob, of that happening?
We want a 0.0384% return on our investment.
One prosecutor.
That's one. And as soon as a couple weeks after we know that they've received the book, all the DAs will be posted on the website with their contact information so that people that have donated can give them a call and ask them if they've read any good books lately and what are they going to do about it.
Mm.
So between that and Vince's cover letter is pretty persuasive.
Yeah, I read the cover letter. It is lengthy. It's at your website, right?
Not yet.
It's not up yet. There's just no way that I could read that entire cover letter. That's going to go out with every book?
Every single one.
Wow. When will you have that letter posted? So at prosecutegeorgebush.com. So people
about 10 minutes after we stop talking.
Oh, okay. Because it's a hell of a letter. I'll tell you, it's almost like a second book. But Bugliosi's attitude about this, I guess, at this point, is he really sees you as an ally in this.
Well, it's just he wrote a great book that cut through all the confusion that we may have had over the last 8 years about what we can do.
Right.
You can write letters, you can march and protest, but nothing has had any impact whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just figured, okay, we can do something. You read the book, and it even has a chapter of, here's questions you can ask Bush when he's on the witness stand, you know.
Right, right.
And, yes, it is true that a lot of counties, a lot of DAs might feel somewhat daunted by the cost of mm-hmm. The case, but part two will be to put together a 501c3 to start raising money to defray the cost of the prosecution. So
that would go to whatever prosecutor decides to take this issue on.
Yeah, as soon as he does the indictment, then we'll say, here's the money, because if you offer them the money beforehand, that looks a lot like bribery or something.
Oh, just a tad, just a tad. I wonder if there are various state laws that would prohibit donations going to a county prosecutor to prosecute a case.
Well, I do remember during the, I don't know if JFK is a historical thing to refer to, but the film, Garrison was getting donations.
Oh, was he?
And I seem to remember reading that a group of businessmen got together in that area to put together some sort of fund for him.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
It's another thing to find out.
Well, but, yeah, yeah. And put it on the list, right?
But we've, you know, I mean, when you see donation after donation, $3, $6, $5 coming in from people who, you know, no one has it to spare.
Right.
And it just adds up. And this is what happens when people don't wait around for somebody else to do something.
Yeah, that's very
true.
They
just jump right in. I mean, everybody did all the heavy lifting. Because all, you know, all I did is put together a website.
Now, don't start that. You and Arminda and Jude have done a hell of a lot more than put together a website. So I think it's amazing. I've not seen an action like it is unique, first of all. But I've not seen an action similar to this in a long time that, you know, organized in this instance by you. And I think it's good that you're right. It's there's a time for demonstrations. There's a time for marches. There's a time for this and that. And there's also a time, you know, it says so in Ecclesiastes. There's also a time to pull down chaos if that's necessary. But This is unique, sending prosecutors a book written by a prosecutor that explains how to get this son of a bitch, since it is utterly and absolutely clear and has been for 2 years that he's probably going to walk as far as somebody in the federal government trying to stop him. So I'm still kind of amazed at what you what you've done. I mean that. I'm just like, what?
Well, it's two things. Everywhere Jude goes, he carries army boots with some flour.
Yes.
To remind everybody who sees them what's going on
mm-hmm.
while we go about our day, mm-hmm. what's happened over 4,000 times.
Right.
And you know, it just struck me when I was reading the book. We can do this. I knew it was a good idea because we could afford to do it.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people have ideas, well, this was going to cost $1 million. Well, go ahead and test that one out.
Yeah, didn't.
But to, you know, and when you talk to your audience and say, look what's going on, and they respond, that's the trigger right there. So mm-hmm. that put us over the finish line.
Well, that was... I'm glad to hear it, and as far as Jude and those boots, those combat boots with the flowers in them, the last time I was in Seattle, I remember looking down on the stage where we were all sitting up there. I think there were six of us and Ron Reagan, and I looked down to my left, and there's boots with flowers in them, combat boots with flowers in them, and it's a profound and moving visual. To see that, and please pass on to Jude that nobody will ever know unless, for some reason, she gets some publicity. That that I, for one, have deep, deep respect for what she and that organization, Women Standing, are doing in Seattle. It's amazing.
Well, she was the trigger. She called me in July after I had read the book to see if I'd go down with her to the DA down here and give him a book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, well, yeah.
You sure?
What a good idea.
Well, please pass on to her, you know, my personal gratitude for you guys allowing me to be part of this. All right, Bob, it's good news. Let's talk. I guess after the holiday season, after Christmas, when the mailing occurs. All right?
After the stuffing part.
After the stuffing part. Okay. All right, Bob Alexander. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Wasn't that good news? I mean, wasn't that good news?
I think of Thomas Jefferson, and it makes me want to cry. To think that the chair he sat in, someone could buy. George wears his faith like a money belt. But I'll pray to Mad Time instead. Please come back, Tom, and save us from King George again. And his
your host for a Peance Freeance future, it's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Hallie writes in, the Republican Party is like Mugabe. She's referring, of course, to the dictator in Zimbabwe. And they won't be satisfied until they have destroyed the American middle class. Only 38 days left to burn, rape, and plunder, and they won't waste a minute. As my Irish grandmother used to say, bless us and save us, Hallie. Boy, that's somebody that needs to, this way off topic or off the subject or whatever, that's somebody who needs to be relieved of his ability to breathe, is Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe. That is unbelievable. From Janine in Youngstown, Ohio, who writes, dear Mike, my father worked on the assembly line at General Motors in Lordstown, Ohio for 30 years. He retired in 1996. And when I hear members of the corporate media blow a lot of hot air about the wealthy UAW employees, I'm puzzled. What the hell are they talking about? I'm from a family of nine, and I don't remember living high off the hog while he was working there. My mother had to make the dollars stretch, especially during the times he was laid off. I went to college in the 1990s, and I don't remember my father being able to pay my college tuition with the money he made at General Motors. I have a mountain of loan debt to prove that. I worry about what will happen to my father's financial situation. Will he lose his health care and his pension? I guess this is the South's revenge over the North, over the loss of the Civil War. Janine, Youngstown, Ohio. There is there's just something evil. I think it's bigger than that, Janine, although I'm sure that plays into it a bit. It's what our Uncle Mike Story Corner was about tonight, and it's what Naomi Klein has written about in the disaster capitalism stuff. We are in a massive transition period of how this country is to be governed, and who's to win and who's to lose and who's to make it and who's to fail. Social Darwinism of a sort that, I don't know, it's starting to rival, well, of course not, but it may begin to rival the Charles Dickens model. All right, I'll tell you what, when we come back, we're going to take some phone calls for the rest of the program. There's not that much of the program left. So we invite you to join in. If you want to make some comments, I'd love to hear what you have to say about this auto bailout situation or loan or whatever you want to call it, from whatever angle. You know, I'm all over the board on this one. You know, on the one hand, I've said I'd like to see Chrysler fail because it's a private equity company owned by a bunch of predators. But then you consider the workers. General Motors has displayed, as has Ford to a degree, a kind of corporate arrogance that is just breathtaking. And yet Ford says, no, we're okay for now. And when I think about all this, I think about not just the workers, but the families of the workers, and not just the people who are directly involved in making automobiles for whomever, but the big supply chain and the businesses that have nothing to do with the auto industry or the supply chain, but do have to do with haircuts and meals and shoes and clothing and trips to the dentist and so on and so forth of all the people who do work in the auto industry and the auto supply industries. And what will happen? You know, I could take you, as Michael Moore could, I can take you places in the Midwest, places where I grew up. And even now, or especially now, show you entire towns, middle class or middle population towns that it's just horrifying to drive through. You drive through and you think, where in the hell am I? Is this the United States? Abandoned business after abandoned business. Not because they were making cars, but because they depended on the people who were. And not just the people who were making cars, but, you know, a spark plug company on outside of town, or a company that made springs that fit inside the seats of automobiles, or little plastic gizmos that cover the doorknobs, door handles inside of an automobile. That sort of business, the kind of stuff you don't even think about. Who in the hell makes rear view mirrors? You know, stuff like that. Hubcaps. Transmissions. Don't forget, most of what Detroit did is assemble. The Ford assembly plant in this city. The Chevy assembly plant in that city. They didn't actually make the parts. One of my earliest memories is waking up every morning hearing the whistle go off when the shift would change. When I was a kid growing up, at Doler Jarvis, which was a company in Toledo that made universal joints for the transmissions that went into cars. And I can remember selling papers on the corner when I was 9 and 10 and 11 years old to shift workers as they change shifts. The Toledo Times for 10 cents a copy. I had a captive market. They all had to walk past my corner. Oh, God, I wish I would have saved some of that money. Oh, well. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, let's talk, all right? 800-989-1480 is the number. You can start dialing now if you like. Nate, wait a second. Oh, Jesus, every line is filled up. Okay, my bad. I'm sorry. I didn't realize it. Okay. Never mind. Just wait a few minutes and then call. We will start taking your calls as soon as we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Thank you.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. And as promised, let's go immediately to the telephones. Mark is calling from San Francisco, listening on the Internet. Hey, Mark.
Hello. Yes, Mike.
Yes,
thank
hi.
You for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, what I wanted to say is that I think that the whole failure to get a bridge loan for the auto workers, for the auto industry, is a really great example of where the Democrats are really coming from. And I know you've spoken a bit about this, and others have too, but if my feeling is if you want to understand the Dems these last years, you really have to accept this one assumption, and that is that they really do. 95% of what the Republicans want, they want. And if you look at it from the FISA bills to the torture bills and everything, they have always done it in such a way that what the Republicans want is what happens. And they get a little bit of a shield. Oh, we tried. Mm-hmm. And this whole thing of the filibuster is that we can't do anything because of a filibuster. It's become the point where, you know, even in some liberal talk shows and newspapers and everything, they talk about, well, you got to have 60 votes in the Senate.
Right.
Well, you don't. And
no,
you know
don't.
It as well as I do.
Right.
And the thing is, look at this one. This is just before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
If Harry Reid really wanted to get a bill through that would give a bridge loan to the auto industry, all he had to say is, okay, hey, put on your tube, your piss tube, have a bag at the bottom, right?
Right.
And get up there, here's a pizza, and read your grandmother's grits and gravy recipes forever.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here. He didn't do it. This is one.
Right.
They always use it as an excuse. Oh, well, we have other stuff to get through. Right?
Right.
Hey, this is one. They're all going home. And these guys are lazy. I mean, the Republicans are lazy.
Yeah, well, the Republicans are venal and crazed and neo-fascist. The Democrats, yeah, they're lazy. They're part of the problem. And I agree with you. So many of the Democrats are no
they
more.
Want it.
Yeah, they're no more Democrats than I believe in some cosmic hoo-ha living up in the clouds. But they continue to front that label. I'm a Democrat,
right.
And you just want to walk up to them and grab them by the shirt front and say, "No, you're not. You're no more of a Democrat than you're a Republican. You're Republican light."
Absolutely.
But you're right. And I certainly have no pithy rejoinder. Harry Reid could have forced this, but some punk named the guy from Tennessee, Bob, who is the senator from. Tennessee.
Which
one? Corker. Yeah, Corker. Yeah. Some nobody. Some sleazy. I saw this guy on television and I just about lost it. He looks like the worst caricature of a used car salesman in some downtown big city who will take your shoes with or take your socks without removing your shoes, this guy.
Exactly. But and, Mike, the thing is the Democrats, as Glenn Greenwald has so pointed out, are totally in with this. We have to understand that.
Right.
And that this case, at this time, right before Christmas break, you say, okay, get up there and filibuster. He's never done it. The only time he wanted to do it was with Dobbs, when he was going to filibuster against elements with inside of the FISA bill.
That's true. All right. Point taken. Mark, thanks, man. Thanks for checking in, okay?
Hey, thanks for coming to San Francisco, too, and don't be a stranger.
I won't. I love that city. It's just too bad it's going to fall into the ocean here pretty quickly. Mike is calling from Chicago, listening on the Internet. Hey, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, Mike? How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, you know what? I'm touching on this point real quickly. Fox News all day yesterday and today, all they keep saying and they're spewing is it was the Senate that shot down this bailout package. Of course, they don't say it was the Republicans in the Senate. They just said it was the Senate. And because there's automatically that linkage that it's a Democratic Senate, everyone automatically blames the Democrats.
Yeah.
But my point, what I wanted to touch base on, I wanted to go off-roading about this whole Blagojevich thing, if you have a sec.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, because you spent time in Chicago, I'm sure you're very familiar with what we call the well-oiled Daley political machine.
Oh, sure.
Well, for all the listeners, back in 2003, Daley wanted to rip up Meigs Field and build a memorial park for his mother, Eleanor.
Now, so people know, Meigs Field is right downtown on the waterfront in Chicago. Go ahead.
Well, in turn, the city council said absolutely not, and I'm sure you remember April 2nd comes along, and in the middle of the night, he blatantly ignored the city council on planning and development, and he dug up Meigs Field anyways,
right,
with the excuse that it was national security and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
What a lot of people aren't aware of, though, is the person in charge of airport development and planning under the Daley administration during that period was Blagojevich's chief of staff, who's now arrested with him, John Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what your take on that is, because to me, I think Daley is as corrupt as the day is long.
I don't know. The old man was corrupt. I don't know if Richie Daley would be considered. Here's my attitude. If you're the mayor of the third largest city, is it still the third largest city in America? And your family has been involved in that city's politics for, 50 or 60 years, you're going to have dealt with some real swine. And most of them will have been Democrats. Because when I left there was one Republican on the aldermanic council. Out of how many aldermen do you have? 30, 40, something like that?
Right.
And I think there was one Republican there. So anytime you have one power government to the extent that the city of Chicago has, it's going to be corrupt. There's no way that it won't be corrupt. Now, is Richie Daley corrupt? Is because he deals with people who are? I don't know. Is Barack Obama corrupt? I keep watching how the national media is just, they, as Media Matters said, they picked up where they left off 8 years ago. They are trying their damnedest to link Barack Obama or to shoehorn Barack Obama into this Blagojevich scandal. It's sickening. Every time I turn on the television, you hear these cheesy-ass men and women anchors and reporters just trying their damnedest to find a linkage.
That guilt by association.
Guilt by association. Now, there's some truth in that concept. Your grandmother probably told you the same thing mine told me. You lay down with dogs, you get up with fleas.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're known by the company you keep. All of that stuff that our grandparents used to tell us. So I don't think Obama is involved in this at all, as far as Richie Daley is concerned. What is considered corruption when you're running a city like Chicago, and what is considered getting the job done? You understand what I'm saying, Mike?
Yeah, there's a large gray area there.
Yeah, there is. There really is. Mike, thanks. I got to move on. Big city politics, these big city political machines that still exist in certain cities like Chicago, yeah, they're going to be corrupt, sure, of course.
Is it any wonder?
talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. You know, our neighbors in the Great White North up in Canada, well, first of all, Stephen Harper, the conservative freak who runs the country, last week suspended Parliament to avoid being run out of office on a no-confidence vote. And as a result of that, there hasn't been a whole lot of public forums or fora, if you want to get perfect here, to discuss the Canadian auto bailout. You know, Windsor, Ontario, and Detroit, Michigan, except for the fact that they're in two separate countries, might as well be, you know, like any town, one town separated by a river. But the Canadian government has already just made a declaration that, hell yes, they're going to help the Canadian auto industry. Hell yes! The Canadian Auto Workers Union, Ford of Canada, the Ford Motor Company of Canada, I think Chrysler of Canada, they've already decided to do it. Now, the head of the auto union in Canada, what's his name here? I have his name here. Where'd his name go? Ken Lewenza asked the Prime Minister Stephen Harper, who's a conservative, and the Liberal Premier of Ontario, right across the river, Windsor is, from Detroit, Dalton McGuinty, the Canadian Auto Workers President, Ken Lewenza, asked these two guys not to wait. Go ahead, get an agreement with the automakers in advance of any settlement in Washington, which would then put some pressure on these rat bastards, these Republicans from down in the deep south here in the United States. But, you know, why is it that the Canadians are not having a problem with this? How much smarter than we are they? And Harris in South Detroit writes in, Mike, is being reported here in Detroit on ABC Channel 7 News that the Canadian government is loaning the U.S. auto companies $3.3 billion to help get them past this downturn. It's, I don't know. Anybody who thinks that this is not about a corporate takeover of the United States, they are just bleeding us. I'm not talking about the bailout money. I'm talking about these filthy bastards in the United States Senate who are willing to throw 4, 5, 6, 7 million people into the swamp by not voting in favor of some sort of relief. They will throw hundreds of billions of dollars at their corporate masters in New York, on Wall Street, which is what they're supposed to do. But this pious, hypocritical standing, well, you know, we got to make sure that the taxpayers of the great United States don't get taken down that primrose path by these goddamn unions. Oh, it's just so infuriating. How did this happen? Well, we all know how it happened. There's no point sitting here asking dumbass questions like, how did it happen? It happened when Reagan Democrats were born. It happened when Ronald Reagan absolutely disbanded and fired the air traffic controllers. And the rest of the country just sat on our asses and let it happen. How many times have we just let things happen? You know, power power does not exist in a vacuum. That's what, if there is a vacuum, power rushes in and destroys a vacuum. That's what's happened here. We have become in this country like a vacuum, like just this big, vast, empty space. Well, I don't have time. Well, I can't do it. Well, I'm not interested. Well, it doesn't affect me. Christ, I'm tired. Well, I'm overworked. Well, I did this 40 years ago. Well. I just wonder how people who are like, 20, 21, 24, 25 years old. They look at our generation and they see, you know, the baby boom generation produced two presidents. That's all. Bush and Clinton. And what did we give? I mean, what did the baby boom generation give? What are we handing off to the next two generations, three, four, five, six? What are we handing off? It's difficult sometimes for me to talk with my 30-year-old son, who, well, he's not 30 yet. He's approaching it. You know, he's a Gen Xer. And he, I don't know what the hell I'm going to say to Molly. My other kids are a bit older. They're in their 40s. But, I take that back. Only one is. But it's just, I don't know how to say, you know, what are we supposed to say? Those of us in this generation, the so-called baby boom generation, or even the war baby generation, that group born in 42, 43, 44, and 45. You know, what are we supposed to say? Oh, I know. Let's listen to some Joe Cocker. That'll make it all good. We'll be right back with your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. Don't you dare go away. This is Nova M Radio.
Sang out of tune, would you stand up and walk out on me?
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour, so let's do some more phone calls here. Starting with Jeremy in Huntington Beach, California, listening to KTLK. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Mike. I just wanted to encourage liberals to reclaim Adam Smith, which is one of the only founders of our economic system that Republicans cite, never having read him. When you actually read him, he was incredibly pro-labor. And the only reason he said that we shouldn't have government's hand in things is because usually they decide for the merchant class.
Right.
And he actually said that the merchant class's interests are exactly opposite of the public interest. So the legislator and the public, he said, have to be extremely aware and on guard against them at all times.
And it's amazing to me how many right-wingers or these supposed free marketeers who are not – as you're pointing out, completely miss the point, or at least the heart of Adam Smith's message. Completely miss it.
Well, because if you know, they think we're
deliberately pervert it.
It's Orwellian. The fact that they cite him when he said things like, "quote the real measure of exchangeable value of all commodities is labor."
Mm-hmm.
And the liberal reward of labor is crucial to the success of society, and that it's not high wages which cause high prices, but a high profit.
Right.
You know, for example, healthcare companies, $1,600 per vehicle go to healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for GM and Ford,
that's
and
right.
high profits like you know oil companies and you know parasitic healthcare companies. I mean, why are none of the Republicans talking about what the war did to oil prices, you know?
They don't dare. They don't dare talk about that. Number one, it would blow their cover. Number two, they are ignorant as worms under a rock in the middle of a forest somewhere. Their job is to do exactly as they're told, to parrot this kind of white people, southern populism, and to do as their corporate contributors tell them to do.
Well, isn't it funny that they call us socialists, and they're the ones complaining that other people make too much money while they get their health care and their entire wage paid for by taxpayers? They try to make us feel like we're parasites?
Right. Welcome to the land right behind the front of the mirror. We are through the looking glass, I think, Jeremy, don't you think?
Well, Yeah, absolutely. Orwell, right here, right now. I mean, it's amazing. Even Reagan. They're farther to the right than Reagan. Reagan had more protection for American industries than all other post-war presidents combined, despite how the media sold us the idea that he was for free markets as well.
But Reagan was such a doddering, he was a movie actor. I mean, first, last, and always, let's remember that. He was an actor. He had no concept of what he was doing in the White House. His relationships with world leaders were so carefully scripted. His take on economics, on domestic policy, on foreign policy, it was all scripted. Ronnie was an actor. And but is the policies that he was supposed to put in place, follow the script, Ronnie, just follow the script, were the policies you're talking about that were the policies of the neo-fascists. And here we are 28 years later, bingo, it's a done deal. Jeremy, thanks, man, for pointing out the Adam Smith thing again, all right?
Thanks.
All right, take care, Jeremy. Email from Ace in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Ace writes, Mike, perhaps we could sell the Republicans on an auto bailout package. If we labeled it correctly as a regressive tax, moving from the pockets of the victims of this failure to the coffers of the perpetrators of this madness. You see, we, and by we I mean the world, we have already lain an unfathomable tab at the foot of the big three. The world has suffered from the refusal to modify and move beyond the petroleum-based internal combustion engine and its ensuing carbon emissions. Consumers of Detroit's own products have suffered untold death and disfigurement from the safety options and design modifications Detroit has at its disposal and routinely suppresses. With 40% child asthma rates in Detroit, even our children have chipped in. In light of the tab we've all chipped in on, $25 billion is insulting chump change. And now the slaves are forced to beg for the funds to keep the whips cracking at their backs. All this supplication just for a chance to keep being exploited. If you've ever questioned whether or not we've moved all the way through the looking glass, wonder no more. From Michigan, where the lines at God's kitchen just keep getting longer and longer, I remain... respectfully yours, Ace in Grand Rapids. Yow. Steve is calling from Framingham, Massachusetts, listening on the internet. Hey, Steve.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm fine. Mike, how you doing?
Good.
Steve, the banker for Framingham.
Oh, Steve, our financial whiz where it concerns. All right. Now what?
Well, before I get going, I wanted to kind of chime in a little bit back to our founding fathers, like Jeremy did, because my educational background is political science. I didn't check out Adam Smith. I've actually been rereading the Federalist Papers and Alexander Hamilton, and my middle-aged growing-up outlook on Alexander Hamilton is he's not conservative. He actually was a flaming liberal, very much behind labor, very much behind not wanting, all the power vested in an executive. They were scared out of their mind because they just got rid of a monarchy.
Right.
And Alexander Hamilton, I thought it was Madison. Yeah, if you go back and read it, it is one Federalist paper after another is Alexander Hamilton stating time and again in the history of Western civilization how dictators and Caesars and all the others have just destroyed the republic.
I should do that. I am grossly ignorant about the Federalist Papers. I've read
great, beautiful reading.
Yeah, I've read bits and pieces like most people, but absolutely at a loss. And what you're saying sounds very interesting. This would be a good thing to do.
You would love it. You would, Mike, you would love it. Anyhow, the latest insanities, and they are tied to the bailouts and to the vote that just happened. And what I find absolutely insulting, as usual, is Mr. McConnell from Kentucky, who stated, well, you know, it wasn't our doing. that created that mess.
I mean, right.
I want you to put that up on a wall somewhere because, wait a minute, Mr. McConnell, it is you and the rest of the senators that year after year and decade after decade gave those companies break after break.
That's
and
right.
Closed your eyes and protected them on environmental, on all kinds of regulation, protected them from Japan and German cars, and gave them billions to allow them to manufacture the cars that they did. They are so wrapped up and involved in it. It is unbelievably insulting. And another part of what's insulting, I got off the phone with right down the block, his staff, Barney Frank.
Barney Frank.
I live about 15 miles from his district.
Mm-hmm.
And I called his office just a few days ago. And I did finally get a hold of the finance committee that works for him.
Right.
But it didn't find anybody old enough to really know what I was talking about, which was just banking.
Mm-hmm.
I said to them, you know, whenever I call you, I lose my train of thought. I'll get back to that if I remember it.
Okay.
There are two owners that I wanted to point out to the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
One is an electronics owner in Illinois, not too far from Kentucky, actually southern Illinois, who was actually on the phone with me today.
Looking for you to help him save his business.
Save his business.
Right.
I could not do it. And this is another gentleman who was practically on his knees. And I want America to hear that. I really want them to hear. I wish they could hear his voice because, again, it's somebody that is just going to lose everything. I could hear in this man's voice how scared he is of seeing tomorrow and seeing the sun come up. He was scared. That's what I heard from him. The other person is a doctor in Massachusetts a couple of days ago. And, again, she ended up crying. And I just want people, Republicans and Democrats, who listen to you. And I just remembered again what I was going to say before.
All right, hold it right there. Let me do this because I got a break, Steve. Hold the thought. Write it down. Whatever you do, just hold on to it.
All right.
And we'll come right back and do that part too. All right? This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program, Ben Birch, our technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, who certainly contributed a lot to this program this week. Our ethical advisors for this program are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. Bruce Enberg is our economic advisor, who also did Trojan work here. And the executive producer is Kathy Bay. Back to Steve in Framingham, Mass., who remembered what he was going to say.
I wrote it down. I took your advice.
Okay.
You know, once you probably realize that once you get over 50,
oh yeah,
you forget things just automatically.
constantly.
What I was trying to tell Barney Frank's staff and what is connected to the bailout is the process that they all of a sudden agreed to with the GM and Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, like, well, they came back in 2 weeks and all of a sudden they had some kind of plan. And again, as a business guy who has thousands of businesses across the country, when I renegotiate or I work out a plan with a customer who has just revenue of maybe $7 or $8 million, which is just a typical small business,
mm-hmm.
it usually takes about a month or two or three or maybe even up to 5 months to work out that plan and work it out and get the kinks out and all that.
Right.
And so to actually have three companies that come back and with revenue of billions and assets of billions and plants all over the world, and now you're telling me that you got a plan in 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
Mike, don't be all over the planet on this one. There are no plans. You know that. I know that. It's, you know, that's ridiculous, and that is absolutely insulting.
But what is, all right? What does that? What does that mean for the people who just tuned in? What does it mean? What you've just said?
What I just said means that there was nothing new between 2 weeks ago when they first came in their limousines, which is totally irrelevant. I couldn't care less if they came in a rocket ship. If you actually came and you said, we actually have brand new plants.
Mm-hmm.
They're built, and they're going to make cars only 50 miles per gallon and over. They're 21st century. They're looking forward, not backward.
The answer still would have been no.
What? No, I would have at least considered looking at that. You know, it would take a little time. I would actually do the grown-up thing and the constitutional thing,
mm-hmm.
to review it, oversight it, et cetera, not with some whacked out czar, but
right.
with a congressional committee as the Constitution requires.
Right.
And doing it in a grown up way, because guess what? I have people who I'm responsible for as a congressman, and their lives and the food on their table and the babies they have depend on me. But instead, what it means to the people listening is, again, here we are again, another Friday, another backroom deal. On Monday, I'm scared out of my mind that what they're going to come back with, which in an unconstitutional way now, because now we have the executive branch making the decisions on how we're spending money,
yeah.
without a bill that is totally outside the constitutional process.
Mm-hmm.
Article 1, Section 7 and 8, that only the House and the Senate can appropriate and make bills on taxing and spending our money.
Well, who was it that said Paulson? Was it Michael Moore or somebody who referred to the Paulson is like the acting president and the legislative branch of the government, all these decisions that are being made?
Exactly. It's completely outside of the Constitution. That it's not make-believe. It's absolutely real, and it's in our Constitution. And what I'm scared of is, yes, there's going to be conditions that are going to be very anti-labor and with all the other wonderful right-wing restrictions with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I am scared of. Like I said originally, I'm also against the bailout as GM and Ford want it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned, I want it where I get the list of all the people that work for those companies. All the people that are still on pensions, nobody would lose a dime. We would spend one heck of a lot less. We would get 21st century technology in those plants.
Mm-hmm.
The corporate cultures of GM, Ford, and Chrysler will not in our lifetimes go to where we need them to be as citizens of this country.
So they need it, there needs to be a purge. This is the part I think that you're probably afraid of, because I am too. There's not going to be the purge necessary.
Right, exactly. And that's what's then. Guess what? This weekend, that purge is done. You know, they're protecting the corporations that they've given those breaks to and allowed, you know, 20. Look at what we have today. Look at what they're trying to sell today. Mm-hmm. Open up the paper today, Boston Globe, et cetera, et cetera. What's in there? Silverados for $14,000. They can't give them away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, or whatever price, whatever.
Right,
but they're
right.
still selling trucks. It's ridiculous. They're still selling all this garbage that's 25 miles per gallon. Even 30 miles per gallon is an insult to our intelligence. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's ridiculous, and that's what they've got. This is the corporate culture that we have. Look, I love Camaros, but if you make me a Camaro that does 50 miles per gallon, I'll buy it. You know, now that I'm a grown up, no, of course I'm not going to buy it. I'm going to buy a Toyota Prius. That's what I'm buying next.
Right, I hear you. Hey, listen, Steve, we're out of time.
Yep.
Let me make a suggestion here. You sound like you need some sleep, pal.
I'm actually going to be driving to Jersey in about 2 hours.
Oh my God! All right, well, take it easy, drive safely, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again.
I love you, man. I really do.
All right, take it easy. Take it easy, Steve. Take it easy. And everybody, I mean, be cool. These are just incredibly weird times. Don't lose it. Don't lose it. Don't lose it. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.